across Wisconsin from Civic Media. This is Up North News Radio. Now, live from our Lake Wissota studio, here's the founding editor of Up North News, Pat Breitlow.
Well, hey there, Wisconsin. Good morning. It is 6:06 on this Wednesday morning, March 13th, 2024. Another beautiful day to have you here up north, live from Lake Wissota, from wherever you're listening, across the Civic Media Radio Network, through the app, on social media, or by podcast. It's just nice to have you along here on this Wednesday. We've got a rather busy show ahead. Our second hour especially has multiple guests that we want to tell you all about. But first, of course, in our first hour, we wrap up the year for the Wisconsin legislature. The state Senate met yesterday, passed a flurry of bills, didn't pass a lot of bills that should have passed, and they're off on vacation, paid by you, for the next 9 months. So we'll be talking about that a little bit. It is Wednesday, so we have Melissa Baldoff here with our weekly climate check. We'll talk a bit about, again, how it's now official. It's now on the record that, you know, 2023 was perhaps the warmest year on record. And what does that mean in terms of some of the policies that can be done and the opportunities as well in an economy that is a little kinder to the environment and what those green jobs can mean? Then in our second hour, we are going to be busy with several guests. In our first half hour, director Mary Mazzio will join us to talk about a new film that she has produced and will premiere day after tomorrow about the Enbridge Line 5 petroleum pipeline that goes through northern Wisconsin and threatens several other indigenous communities up there. And we're going to be telling that story to you. In our homeroom segment at 7:30, we will be talking about school referendums. As we've said before, there are 91 of them on ballots across Wisconsin. Every one of them is essentially an indictment against, you know, 12 years of Republican rule of the legislature and the chronic underfunding of what schools need to provide a proper education. And so school districts, the legislature is making the school districts look to be the bad guys by going to voters and saying, well, the state won't do its share. Will you make up the difference in property taxes instead? So there's going to be a very big referendum for the Milwaukee Public School District and then other referendums around the state. We will talk to, Angela Lang from Block in Milwaukee is going to join us to talk about support for the Milwaukee referendum. Danielle Whitaker is a school board member in Bristol, and we'll talk about some of the other communities both today and next Wednesday that are facing referendums the following week, which would be April 2nd, and that would be Election Day here all across Wisconsin. It will be Election Day. It will include the presidential primary, although that really won't mean anything anymore because as of yesterday's primaries, both President Biden and former President Trump have mathematically sewn up the nominations of their parties. Not that that was ever in doubt, but you know, if you need to at least mark the milestone, well, that's what we've got for you, is a repeat of the race 4 years ago. It's not a repeat that a lot of folks get excited about, but it is a very important rematch just the same. The stakes are even higher now than they were 4 years ago. And again, in my attempt to be a glass half full person, I would remind everybody that although this is not the dream matchup voters are looking for, 4 years from now, things are going to look a lot different, and hopefully for the better in this country. You will have an entirely different nominee for the Democrats. You almost certainly will have an entirely different nominee for the Republicans. A lot's going to happen, but we only get there if we're able to get through this election year by making good choices and preserving American democracy. All right, you can have your input on the show as well at this new phone number, 855-75-CIVIC, 855-75-CIVIC, 855-752-4842. We'd love to have you along as a text to that number, a phone call, or an email. Send that to us, radio@upnorthnewswi.com, or put a comment in Facebook if you're watching us on the Up North News Facebook page or the Civic Media Facebook page. It is 20 degrees cooler here in Chippewa Falls than it was this time yesterday. Yesterday it was 51. Right now it's 31 here on Lake Wissota. Other places, 10 to 15 degrees colder than yesterday. Hayward's at 24, Park Falls 25, Wausau 37, Green Bay reporting 31 degrees, La Crosse is at 37, Wisconsin Rapids 28, Oshkosh 38, Madison 35, and in Waukesha right now it is 37 degrees, where we find in Waukesha the man, the myth, the legend, Greg Buck. Good morning. He's found new walk-up music, and it's a trail of pixie dust. He rides in on a trail of pixie dust to say, hello, good people, or whatever you say.
Good morning, sunshine. The sun moves. I don't know. Some says hello.
Yeah, there we go. Okay.
Good morning, Pat.
Good morning.
I have a question for you, actually.
Good, because I didn't have one for this morning, so ask me a question.
So in your knowledge of presidential runs, have you ever seen an opposing, not the incumbent, but the opposing candidate lock up the nomination so quickly?
Mm-mm. No, because I don't think we've ever had an instance in our lifetimes where an ex-president is looking to get back in.
Yeah. Since Grover Cleveland.
Is it Grover? Yeah, it'd be. I wondered if there'd been one since then. Well, the closest
Richard
would be
Nixon.
Teddy Roosevelt.
Richard Nixon wasn't president. Never mind. Sorry. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Teddy Roosevelt, 1912, running as the Bull Moose candidate.
Exactly.
From the Bull Moose Party, and that didn't work out.
Locked it up right away because he just started his own party.
Yeah, which is funny because Trump could have done the same thing, but instead he said, oh, look at this nice Republican Party. I think I'll take this over.
Yeah.
And he has, you know, much like a tumor. But yeah, it's all
not a tumor.
It is going to be it's going to be a long, hard slog here over the next 7.5 months or so. Again, all I can say is this is the choice we have. It's going to be a binary thing. We're going to be sick of all of it by November. And there are some people who are counting on that. They're like, if we get people sick of it, they won't show up on election day, and that'll increase our odds. And I can't say enough. Think of somebody who maybe you don't support how they're going to vote. Just imagine they are going to show up anyway, no matter what. They're going to show up on election day. And so are you going to counter that, or are you just going to surrender?
I have a really good feeling based on – I know this is just a Wisconsin example for the first one, but Judge Janet's, and now Justice Janet's election, the presidential election of 2020, and the election of the primary in 2020, where Milwaukee had all but five polling places closed. People didn't stay home. They're like, oh, you want to do this to us? You want to try this?
Yep.
Here we go. And we came out and voted, and it was overwhelming.
They do. And that is, by and large, what we do in Wisconsin. It's just that you want to guard against complacency and just assuming that that's going to happen. So you'll hear me talking a lot about keeping people motivated to go vote. And the other stat I throw out at people is, Wisconsin did great in 2020, 70% turnout. But that's 30% of eligible voters who said, nah, don't want to. That's 1.25 million people in Wisconsin alone who stayed home 4 years ago. So it's just really a matter of not just who shows up to vote, but who says, nope, not worth my time, not going to do it. And we're here just to continue to inform and motivate. And President Biden, of course, has said many a time that he's not taking Wisconsin for granted. Here's how he's proven it. He's coming back. He'll be at in Milwaukee tonight. We're pretty sure it'll be the Pfister, which, by the way, since you're down near Milwaukee, then the Pfister is this grand hotel in downtown Milwaukee. But the stories of it being haunted, is that something you buy into? I mean,
no.
would you stay in the Pfister?
Yeah, I would. I don't believe in ghosts.
Yeah.
I'm a killjoy like that. People are like, oh, do you believe in ghosts? I'm like, no.
No. No. Makes for great stories.
Yeah.
So, thanks for that, guys.
It's funny that athletes won't sleep there, but.
Well, athletes have their own superstitions, that we don't need to explore in any great detail. But the president is coming to Wisconsin off on a 2-day swing through Wisconsin and Michigan, looking to create some momentum for the reelection campaign after his State of the Union address last week, in which he tore into Donald Trump as a threat to the nation's core ideals of democracy and freedom. The stop in Milwaukee for the president will first involve awarding a little over $3 billion for infrastructure projects in disadvantaged communities. And look, if you're an easily aggrieved white guy, you're not going to like this next segment. Have a seat for a little bit. You know, your life is still okay. It's not, your life isn't without problems, but your life is okay compared to what, you know, other communities have endured for generations. For example, the money that President Biden is announcing for infrastructure is going to help repair neighborhoods in Black, Hispanic, and Asian communities that were cut off from their surroundings years ago by major highways and roads. The president's going to highlight $36 million to reconnect parts of Milwaukee's 6th Street because highway construction through that area brought in, you know, the highways and the fast-moving traffic that physically divided the area. And we know this to be true. We know how those highways weren't put through the central part of American cities by accident. And slowly but surely, these neighborhoods are being reconnected either as the freeways are being reimagined or through other points of access. Nobody wanted to make that investment until President Biden came along. He's also going to oversee the opening of his campaign headquarters. That, too, will be in Milwaukee, where nearly 40% of the residents are Black, rather than in Madison, where presidential campaigns typically have put their headquarters. It is, again, a way to signal to a core constituency for the president that that you are being listened to and that there are priorities that are going to create jobs and reconnect neighborhoods and not take your vote for granted. But then in one other example of the president targeting a particular group, there is a Polish-American population of some size in Wisconsin and also in Michigan as well. And with Donald Trump recently saying that he would tell Russia to do whatever the hell they want to some NATO allies, it's why the president moved quickly with a three-week, six-figure digital ad campaign that targets nearly a million Baltic Americans in Wisconsin, Michigan, and Pennsylvania to say, we haven't forgotten what Putin is, who he is, what he's doing to Ukraine, and how he would turn to the Baltic states next if Republicans continue to just roll over for this guy. We'll unpack more of the news in just a bit. First, a reminder that wherever you're listening across Wisconsin on this Wednesday morning, when you're here, you're up north, live from Lake Wasota on the Civic Media Radio Network.
Do-do-do-down, do-be-do-down-down, comma-comma-down, do-be-do-down-down.
If you're not familiar with this from Neil Sedaka, listen, it's going to come all the way down, and then it's going to come back up here in just a minute as he remakes his own song.
You tell me that you're leaving, I can't believe it's true.
God, I wish I could play piano like this.
Girl, there's just no living without you.
Right here, you just tinkle your keys up the ivories, and there
don't
you launch into a torch song. Breaking up is hard to do. He did it in the 50s, and then he reimagined it in the 70s. It's Neil Sedaka's birthday today. We'll talk about that and more musical memories in today's history lesson coming up in just a bit. Greg, do you play any instruments?
Yeah.
You're about to tell me, I play piano just like that. What are you talking about?
No, I've been playing guitar since I was 7. I can play the bass. Mm-hmm. I can play some drums. I can play keyboards if you show me what to do. But yeah, I played in bands from the age of 14 to my mid to late 20s.
Wow.
Yeah.
You're doing comedy now, but have you ever thought that, you know, maybe music is going to be a part of your next chapter?
Possibly. I've been kind of missing being in bands. Like, if I could find a group to be in where we said, hey, let's just do 4 shows a year. We'll practice a month before each show, but we all have lives. We're not going to get famous. We're not going to try to get record signing. We're just going to play the music we like, and we'll play 4 shows a year. I'd be down for that.
I could totally see you doing that.
Yeah.
And having fun.
Oh, absolutely.
Along the way.
Absolutely.
Oh, God. I'm really jealous. I'm very jealous. I wish I could have learned an instrument then. But apparently I learned how to yodel. So here I am yodeling to you about the elections and along those same lines. Actually, before I tell you what could be happening new with Wisconsin drop boxes for ballots, Another reminder that we always appreciate your calls here at 855-75-CIVIC, or you can use the text line and we'll see it that way and share your comment with others as well. Now, about Dropboxes, and get set for a little head-spinning irony over here. The Wisconsin Supreme Court will consider overturning a Wisconsin Supreme Court ruling that limited the use of absentee ballot drop boxes. That's because the court back in July of 2022, when it was controlled by conservatives, that court ruled that drop boxes may only be used in election offices and no one other than the voter can return a ballot in person, which was all very surprising considering that for many, many elections prior to that, drop boxes were fine. They were not challenged. No courts said that there was anything wrong with them. But as soon as Donald Trump said, drop boxes are why I lost in 2020, you suddenly saw groups and then justices go on the attack against drop boxes. But now that Janet Protasiewicz flipped the court to liberal control last year, it set the stage for flipping the ruling. Priorities USA, a progressive voter mobilization group, asked the court last month to reconsider the ruling, and the justices issued an order last evening saying they would review the ban on drop boxes. Now, one of the far-right justices, conservative Rebecca Bradley, wrote in another typically scathing dissent that there's no reason to revisit the decision and that the liberal majority is signaling they intend to declare drop boxes legal in, quote, a shameless effort to readjust the balance of political power in Wisconsin, end quote. You mean like what you did in July of 2022. I think, again, the voters should be congratulated for being democracy's correcting mechanism here. That when you have people who have been in office or in a position for so long and become so full of themselves that they lose sight of the original mission of their office and start using it for personal or partisan gains, the voters show they still have the power now and then to make a change in who gets to sit in those offices, who gets to wear those judicial robes. And this may be a case where at some point, Wisconsin voters will again be able to use a drop box for filing their absentee votes and letting more people participate in American democracy. But speaking of people who have become drunk on their own power, that takes us to the final session of the Republican-controlled Wisconsin State Senate for 2024. Yeah, their final session was yesterday. You are now paying for them to be on a nine-month paid vacation until after the election, until after next year. But before Republicans left, they fired eight more of Governor Tony Evers' nominees and appointees, including two members of the University of Wisconsin Board of Regents, as well as members of other boards, for the first time ever, members of the Wisconsin Judicial Commission, a body that's been around for over 40 years, never had anybody fired from it until now, but again, not for cause, but just because. On the Board of Regents, we've mentioned before that it was John Miller and former Assembly Rep Dana Walks, both who have been serving with honor, but they're also the ones who had the audacity or courage, or common sense, to vote against a deal that Assembly Speaker Robin Voss worked out with the head of the UW system to essentially blackmail the UW system into limiting their campus diversity, equity, and inclusion programs. And Miller and Walks were amongst those who said, no, we're not going along with that form of blackmail. And so Republican Senate Leader Devin Lemahieu had hinted earlier on Twitter, gee, nice regent's job you got there. Sure would be a shame if something happened to it. And yesterday, those two were fired. The Senate also voted to reject confirmation for Judicial Commission members Yolanda Anderson, Jane Foley, Janet Jenkins, and Judy Ziewatz. That's a commission that investigates and prosecutes misconduct allegations against judges. Well, during their confirmation hearings last year, these four people were taking questions from Republicans and would not say how they would handle complaints against Justice Janet Protasiewicz and the rest of the Supreme Court's liberal majority. Well, Senator Kelda Royz on the floor of the Senate yesterday, you know, shot back at any accusations that these nominees were being evasive and pointed out correctly that Republicans were using the hearing to inappropriately force the appointees to prejudge a hypothetical case, something you would never want judge nominees to do. But Republicans tried to goad them into saying yes or no. They would punish Janet Protasiewicz for doing X, Y, or Z. And when they didn't answer, they decided to reject their nominations. In other words, it's a temper tantrum. It was another temper tantrum that Republicans in the state capitol have been doing since 2018, when Tony Evers beat Scott Walker and took over the governor's office. Even before Evers could raise his hand to take the oath of office, Republicans had met in a lame duck session as part of a temper tantrum and removed some powers from the governor and from the attorney general's office. And they continue their temper tantrum to this day. They also yesterday fired a member of the governor's domestic abuse council after Republicans accused the group of taking what Republicans considered a stance against white people, because it's always about being aggrieved. And they rejected a member of the Deferred Compensation Board, which administers an optional retirement savings plan for government employees. But like some of the other firings, no Republicans would say why. Not one Republican senator would stand up and say, well, this is why we're firing some of these people. In other words, it's just an abuse of power. It is sleazy, it is corrupt, and it explains why so many Wisconsinites are happy to see new maps determining what will make up the next legislative session. The Midwest Farm Report is coming up next, and then Melissa Baldoff with our climate check here up north. It is time now on Up North News Radio for our weekly climate check with Melissa Baldoff as we talk about policy and data and everything that tells us about the threats and the opportunities that come with a changing climate. Melissa, good morning. How are you?
Good morning. I'm doing well. How about you?
Doing all right. Thank you. But again, for me, and I can't put enough disclaimers on this. We know there are issues with the climate, but we also know that my idea of winter recreation is walking out to the hot tub. I don't ski, I don't ice fish or anything like that. This has not been great for a lot of, you know, businesses in Wisconsin and around the country. And now we have hard data that tells us just what this most recent winter was like. What are they reporting from the state climatology office?
Yeah, from the state climatology office, confirming that this is the warmest winter in Wisconsin since 1895, when they started keeping these records, and not by a small amount, by 10 degrees, which is a pretty significant amount. So, you know, this is something that we've heard speculation and we've heard conversation about for a number of months from scientists, from experts around the country and around the world, saying that 2023 was going to be the warmest year on record, that it was going to be a warm winter. And now we've got this data specific to Wisconsin to back up that, you know, unfortunate speculation that this is the warmest winter in Wisconsin since these records have been kept. And to your point, and I really like your idea of winter recreation, because that is also mine. but I do like to get out for a nice winter hike, though, here and there. And I've thought about doing some snowshoeing, because I know that there are so many like of our trails do some very special winter things. But I know that there are a lot of folks who get out there and it's their favorite time to be outside and experiencing all that our state has to offer. And to your point as well, there are a number of businesses that rely on that aspect of the tourism industry, of the recreation industry. And it's really harmful to them to have this warm of a winter.
And let's be clear, this is not something isolated to Wisconsin. Looking at an article about this in the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, they have a map graphic up from the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration, and it shows that, you know, the upper Midwest, Wisconsin, Michigan, Minnesota, Iowa, North Dakota, and then New York State, Vermont, New Hampshire as well, that whole tier of states right there had basically their record high warmest winter on record. And you can tell from the map, you know, the way that the trends are kind of going here. And so what do we get from this? We get that that this is a trend. And I also want to make clear again when we're talking about a trend, because next year could be super cold and everybody be like, oh, see, what was the you know, hubbub about? But then the very next winter could be the warmest yet. When you look at the trend line, things are not looking good in terms of preventing the damage that's going to come from a changing climate. And there's going to be no shortage, I fear, Melissa, of extreme weather, all kinds of extremes, the heat, the cold, the wet, the dry, because that's what a climate does when it's had a wrench thrown in it.
Exactly. And, you know, something else interesting from that article was not just, you know, the fact that we're seeing this warmer weather, and we know that that is, you know, bad for recreation and tourism, and it's difficult for a lot of folks to, you know, to plan. But it also included this winter our first February tornado, which is pretty significant. And we know that there can be a lot of devastation from these kinds of weather events. And, you know, usually cold weather is preventing tornadoes from happening in a place like Wisconsin. I thought it was also really interesting that the National Weather Service this winter issued more tornado and thunderstorm warnings than they did winter weather warnings. Wow. So, you know, just another sign of this, you know, unpredictability. And, you know, kind of chaos when it comes to the weather. You know, of course, the weather is never going to be completely predictable. But like you said, you can usually count on some trends. And when it's so wild and all over the place, it makes it really difficult for folks to, you know, to get through the winter when they just don't have any idea what's coming.
And we saw just, you know, this past week, we escaped much of it, but the, you know, the Northeast saw a storm with just substantially higher than normal winds. You know, that turned out to be a deadly storm as well. And so, again, we need to be mindful that this is what exists now. There are things that can be done that can not entirely reverse what's been done, but stop causing damage and put us on a better path. And that takes us to a topic we discussed a couple of weeks back, and that was the EPA really getting serious about cracking down on what's called deadly soot pollution, the finest particles of pollutants that come from industry, and the EPA saying, we really need to toughen these standards. And half of the states in the union that have Republican control have said, nah, we'd rather be on Team Soot.
Exactly. And, you know, but for Tony Evers and Josh Call being in office, Wisconsin would be one of those states, I'm quite sure. We saw, you know, in the previous administration that Scott Walker and Brad Schimmel were game to join just about any GOP lawsuit they could. And that's, you know, a lot of time and money being wasted in our state. So thankfully we have leadership that is, you know, defending Wisconsin. And we have Attorney General Call, you know, among a multi-state coalition looking to uphold these regulations. We know that this is, you know, really important. Attorney General Call is joined with 15 other Democratic attorneys general to support these regulations. And we know how important they are. From what we've heard on, you know, in our conversations in the past, we know that, you know, this pollution is incredibly harmful, particularly to kids, older folks, and people with already pre-existing health conditions, and people in, you know, communities that are close to where the pollution is happening. We've got some of those communities around the state, and we know that it's incredibly harmful.
The Republican lawsuit is being led by the Attorneys General of Kentucky and West Virginia. And the Kentucky Attorney General, Russell Coleman, says, quote, "The EPA's new rule has more to do with advancing President Biden's radical green agenda than protecting Kentuckians' health or the environment." He says the rule will, quote, "drive jobs and investment out of Kentucky and overseas, leaving employers and hardworking families to pay the price." Is there any chance that the Attorney General of Kentucky has heard squadouche about all the green energy jobs that are being created in many parts of rural America, by the way, by embracing where we're going with this economy, the jobs that can be created, and less pollution? Again, I know it's Kentucky, it's West Virginia, you kind of like your coal there, but could they really be that out of touch with where the future of the economy is?
You know, I think it is often true that two things can be true. I think that we certainly could surmise that they are very out of touch. And I also believe that they are so politically driven that they're willing to say or do anything that they think is going to be harmful to Joe Biden. And as the president said in his State of the Union address, you know, to kind of paraphrase him, if any of those states don't want the investment in the jobs that has been put forth through the Inflation Reduction Act and other efforts by this administration, you know, they can send it back and have that investment go to other states that want it. But, you know, we know that these states do want the investment in their communities, but they are willing to say and do anything they can to score political points. And, you know, the argument that they make that, you know, this is, you know, somehow harmful to the economy is just preposterous when we know that this is expected to have $46 billion in net health benefits by 2032. And we already have some evidence from, you know, the EPA releasing information that soot pollution has declined by 42% since 2000, even while the GDP has increased by more than 50%. So we can see that having, you know, higher standards and putting some downward pressure on pollution is not harming our economy at all. If anything, you know, we are getting more and more proof that we don't have to sacrifice health and wellness and our people in order to have a successful economy.
Exactly. And I think we'll talk more about this in the weeks to come, but there's a group called Climate Power that put out something called The State of the Clean Energy Boom and notes that in just over a year, companies have moved forward with projects that are going to account for 271,000 new clean energy jobs. And then they break it down state by state, and we'll get into, you know, what things are looking like in Wisconsin. The report goes on to say that so many of these new jobs are being created in rural America. So the opportunity is there, and the data is there that says you are essentially making up stuff about the business hit, whereas wouldn't you rather see the benefit of $46 billion in net health benefits as you have fewer asthma attacks, fewer premature deaths, fewer people with heart and lung conditions? That's all there. It just seems so knee-jerk, Melissa, that they're like, well, if it's bad in the short term for a corporation's bottom line, it must be a net negative when everything we've seen indicates otherwise.
Exactly. And, you know, one of their arguments is that, well, this is going to be too hard on counties to, you know, be in compliance with these regulations. But the EPA expects that 99% of U.S. counties will be able to meet the revised standards in time, which is 2032. So, you know, it's just, again, ridiculous to suggest that this is something that that counties and states are not going to be able to handle. What really is happening is that these Republican attorneys general want to do the bidding of the industries that benefit from not having regulations. They're not making a strong case, you know, against this kind of, you know, really common sense change that is going to protect a lot of people's health.
Right. And so now in future visits, we're going to talk more about the clean energy boom. There's also, you know, a new analysis about how it's at the county level that there are counties across America that are blocking the future of renewable energy. We kind of talked about this with Hans Brighton Moser yesterday when we talked about all the rural economic development aid that's going out there. It's going out there not willy-nilly, but to local units of government, county, city, village, towns that actually work for it, that do the homework and say, hey, here's opportunity for funding and investment and jobs and things like that. And yet there are these other counties that are doing what they can to be an impediment. So we'll get into all of that in coming visits as well as we do our weekly climate check with Melissa Baldoff. Melissa, thank you so much. Have a great day. We'll talk to you next week.
Thank you.
Sorry, let me repeat something I said there about doing something willy-nilly, because apparently if you say willy-nilly, somebody rings the old man bell on you, so consider me properly penalized for that. We missed doing sports earlier. Just one note that I wanted to pass along. The Sacramento Kings beat the Milwaukee Bucks last night. That's their first win over the Bucks in more than 8 years. Sacramento had not defeated Milwaukee since February 1st of 2016. The 15-game losing streak was the longest active streak for any team. The Kings beat the Bucks 129-94. Giannis had 30 points, but the team went 1-3 on their California swing. Doc Rivers, classic Doc, saying, "It's my fault. I didn't get them prepared the way I should mentally." The Bucks fly back home, and they will host Philadelphia tomorrow night. We'll have today's history lesson and musical memories in just a bit. You're up north. Song "The Immigrant" is one of more than 500 songs written or co-written by Neil Sedaka, who turns 85 today. Happy 85th birthday to Neil Sedaka, born in Brooklyn and one of the real veterans of the Brill Building, this otherwise nondescript office building in New York City where several music companies, record companies were located, and where so much of the American songbook of the 50s, 60s, 70s were written. Neil Sedaka charted a lot in the 50s, early 60s, then was kind of wiped off the map by the British invasion and rock and roll, and then came back in the 70s in the soft rock era. On this day in 1965, the Beatles had landed their seventh number one hit with 8 days a week. On this day in 1972, rapper Common was born. So he's 52 years old today. Common was born Lonnie Rashad Lynn Jr. in Chicago. Here's that one moment you always have to bring up in the history books. For this day in 2007, Amy Winehouse's second album, Back to Black, was released. It would go on to win 5 Grammy Awards for album the following year, including Record of the Year and Song of the Year for this Harbinger indication.
They tried to make me go to rehab. I said no, no, no. Yes, I've been black, but when I come back, no, no, no.
Yeah, would rehab have been the answer? Yeah, probably, as she would later die of a drug overdose. But she was rather unapologetic about the lifestyle while she was living it there, Greg.
Yeah, absolutely. It's almost like you just were waiting for the day when they said she passed, and you're like, oh, yeah, that kind of makes sense. I don't like saying that out loud, but there are some people out there.
It did. It just tracked. And some people, you know, I've heard some people say they would be happy to die young if they could be a legend, if they could have, you know, eternity that way. I'm like, well, but you're not here to enjoy it.
Yeah.
You know, that would be the better way to go. I'd rather be in Neil Sedaka's shoes right now, and not that, you know, not that active of a lifestyle, but still around to enjoy your family and things like that.
He's revered, and think of the music she'd be making almost 20 years down the road.
Yeah. Yep. Exactly. So again, that was this day 2007 when the album was released. On this day in 2013, a papal conclave elected Cardinal Jorge Mario Bergoglio to take the name of Pope Francis as the 266th Pope of the Catholic Church. Again, Pope Francis elected this day 11 years ago. On this day in 1976, The Four Seasons, without Frankie Valli anymore, but The Four Seasons had a number one hit with this tune. And it's got some historical significance I'll tell you about in a second. By charting with this hit at number one on this day in 1976, The Four Seasons became the only act to have a number one hit before the Beatles, during the Beatles, and after the Beatles. And it came with this particular song this day in 1976. On this day 4 years ago, in 2020, Breonna Taylor was killed by police officers who were forcibly entering her home in Louisville. Her death sparked extensive protests against racism and police misconduct. And that was on the same day in 2020 when President Trump declared the COVID-19 pandemic to be a national emergency in the United States. On the calendar today, it is Canine Veterans Day. It is No Smoking Day. It is... Oh, Greg, this is for you. This is National Coconut Tort Day. Congratulations. We know how much you love coconut.
I'm not happy about this at all. I'm unhappy about this.
I did not bring any coconut tort to share, and I put away the Caramel Delight Samoa cookies. I will not be showing those to you on camera again.
Oh, it's Coconut Tort Day? Oh, darn it. I didn't turn on the sound effect. Never mind. I'm just so angry about coconut getting a day.
Hey, I'll give you another shot. Hey, Greg.
What?
You know what day it is?
What?
It's Coconut Tort Day. This is National Earmuff Day, which we didn't need much of those this winter. This is National Jewel Day, not the singer.
Oh, darn it.
I believe the accessory. Yeah. And it's National Good Samaritan Day.
Nice.
So get out there and do something nice for somebody else.
Hey, Why Pat, I'm not going to give you coconut. There, I did it.
Thank you. Wow, that's very giving of you. There has been an effort to recall Assembly Speaker Robin Voss that we've talked about over the past couple of days. Looks like it might not happen now. Supporters of former President Trump, who have been trying to force a recall of the Assembly Speaker, apparently did not gather enough signatures to trigger a recall election, at least under one scenario reviewed by elections officials yesterday, but the state Supreme Court might be asked to weigh in. Recall organizers fell more than 900 signatures short of what was needed to force a recall against Voss. The group feels like Voss did not do enough to help Donald Trump in his attempt to essentially overturn and manufacture results here in Wisconsin in 2020. Now, unfortunately, there's some gray area here as far as should the number of valid signatures come from the current assembly district of Robin Voss or the new district that he would serve in, or some other combination. So the Supreme Court may need to weigh in, although it's not clear that there were enough signatures in any of those given scenarios to force a recall election. The recall organizers, in a statement, said they look forward to challenging the rejection of any signatures that they submitted. And what others have said, and I can't disagree, that this is almost according to plan. That they would announce a recall effort, they would turn things into the Wisconsin Elections Commission, they would be thwarted, and it would give them reason to continue the talking point that the deep state and the Wisconsin Elections Commission is corrupt, and therefore, you know, again, we need Donald Trump in there, and we need Ron Johnson, who basically wanted the Elections Commission to be ignored, and for the legislature itself to determine who won elections. So having a sloppily organized recall attempt and having it fail might have been just exactly what they were looking for. One last note from yesterday's legislative wrap-up on the state Senate. There was a bill there to expand tax breaks for buying gold coins and bars. A tax break for that. Democrats tried to attach amendments saying, how about if we give a tax credit for diapers and tampons finally in Wisconsin? Or how about a tax credit for veterans and surviving spouses to more easily get a property tax credit? Republicans said no on both of those efforts. But the tax break for gold coins and bars, it's right there. We'll talk to the director of a documentary about the Enbridge Line 5 in northern Wisconsin next. You're up north.